Do you find that you often get attracted to the wrong type of person? Maybe people that essentially, you know, you treat you badly, or you feel aren't healthy for your long-term future in a relationship. Today we're talking about what to do and what happens and why you get involved with the wrong person. If you'd like to find out more about how to improve your relationship, head over to therelationshipmaze.com and press subscribe right now. Welcome to today's episode of The Relationship Maze, and today we're talking about why do you get attracted to the wrong type of people?
Yes, I'm pretty sure that most people could say that this has happened to them, particularly when they were younger, that they were always going for the cool guy or the cool girl in the class, for example, in, you know, at school, always going for someone who might not quite be available to them. Well, certainly that was my experience. I always had crushes when I was younger at school, probably also at university. I always had crushes on guys who were actually ultimately not available to me. And I actually know that a lot of my friends had as well. So we always kind of chose the cool dudes, right, with the leather jackets. This was very fashionable at the time. They were cool. They were not available. They were very aloof, and you couldn't get a grasp of them, really. That's what made them so absolutely fascinating and interesting. And the more somebody kind of disregarded you or ignored you or didn't pay attention to you, the more interesting they became. So they became a bit of a challenge. Can you relate to that?
Not so much.
Okay.
No. Sort of. I mean, you know, I think it's just sort of, you know, sometimes getting attracted to people for the wrong reasons. So, mm-hmm. you know, and again, what is cool? Because, mm-hmm. you know, usually when I was younger, it's like I'd see those sort of guys at school who people label as the cool kids. Mm. And, maybe you'd see some girls were attracted to them. And you always think, like, why on earth? Because the way they behave is just, you know, just completely... I want to use words that essentially yes. probably aren't appropriate here. you know, used to be even, you know, as really, you know, idiots, basically.
Yes.
So
yeah.
sort of like you always think, what is going on there?
Mm.
And, yeah, I think when I was growing up, I'm not sure it was about the cool girl.
Mm.
It was just certain things about them. But, you know, mm. usually it ended up with, you know, that it didn't work out for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, why did that happen? I found there were cycles where that would happen repeatedly,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, it might work for a little bit of time, but then, you know, end up with, you know, being ultimately hurt or being very upset.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, essentially what causes these patterns where you keep getting into cycles of relationships where maybe it just doesn't work out, where you end up feeling that you're getting hurt,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you end up with somebody that, you know, seems to be almost toying with you sometimes. And,
mm.
you know, what is it that causes this to happen?
Mm.
And I think one of the things as well is that, you know, first of all, when it depends on the age that you are to some extent, because I think when people are, you know, at school, when they're at college, when they're at university, there's that age when you're still forming your sense of who you are, what your identity is. You don't really know who you are. So I think, you know, when you're younger, there is that sense of, I don't really know what I'm looking for in a relationship. I don't know what a relationship should be like. So there is this newness as well, where it's kind of getting a sense of who you are, what a relationship would be like, what kind of makes you happy. But then there's also the baggage that you bring from the past as well, in terms of, you know, how your parents' relationship were. Past relationships as well that may have caused kind of upset, that may have been quite traumatic, and then cause us to behave in certain ways, cause us to choose people that essentially, well, maybe, for example, we're not going to get too close to, because if we did, we know ultimately we'd get hurt.
Well, in couples therapy, we always work, well, not all of us, but some of us, it depends on, you know, what your training entailed. But there's a very common underlying theory or assumption, which is that in couples relationships, we're always looking to replicate something from the past. So we're looking for a partner who reminds us sufficiently of some of the qualities of our parents, and our parents as a composite, both of them together. So they remind us of qualities that our parents had, the good, the bad, and the ugly qualities. And we're looking for someone who replicates some of these qualities that we experienced as negative, so that we can kind of have another round, another go, so to speak, in the next relationship, in our adult relationships, where we can remedy this, where there is a different outcome. We're looking for someone who is sufficiently similar to mum and dad, but who also offers us the possibility of a different outcome, a more healing outcome, a more loving outcome. So when we are looking around, we're very often drawn to people who have these kind of qualities that are often troublesome. And you might recognize this, you know, this is the sort of question that people often ask, like, why does somebody who's had alcoholic parents go for a partner who's an alcoholic, for example? Or why does somebody who had very aggressive parents go for an aggressive partner? They're often these kind of repetitions, because there is this unconscious desire to kind of heal the old wounds. So if your partner, also the other thing, the other task, the unconscious task with couples is that if your partner is too easy, so to speak, too easy for you, too good, too perfect, too nice to everything, then they don't offer you a possibility to heal the old wound. So they've got to offer a bit of a challenge, so to speak. You have to prove yourself worthy to your partner. They have to realize how absolutely wonderful you are. And when you have overcome that challenge, then you're going to be in a wonderful relationship. Now, this all sounds a little bit weird, maybe, when I describe it like that. But that's very often the pattern that plays out. And that explains why we get drawn to people who are actually really not the right kind of people for us, who don't offer us that kind of healing opportunity.
And I think there's another way of viewing this as well, though, which is, it may not be sort of being attracted to people necessary to heal an old wound. It's just that we've got used to that. It's that we form a belief that I'm not worthy. And that's what we're used to. And I think sometimes, you know, once we have that belief, if I think that basically, you know, I'm not worthy of love, we go through life with that. Maybe not as an opportunity to heal that. I mean, that's one perspective, but that's what we got used to. It's not true, because when you were a little baby, you didn't have that belief. It's something that you developed later on. But essentially, with all of our beliefs, we go through life, you know, seeing these as filters that we view the world through. And so we see things like this, we kind of do things to reinforce these beliefs. You know, if I believe the world is flat, I'm not going to go beyond a certain limit because I might think I'd fall off. So, you know, these beliefs determine how we kind of act in the world and interact. And also, I think, you know, some of you listening as well, it may be that you might think, well, yeah, but I don't find anything about my parents particularly something I'd be attracted to in another person. I think it's also possible that we form an idealized view of relationships that our parents' relationships were maybe part of, but also we internalize different views of how relationships are from media, stories, which combines with that experience of our parents' relationship. But we then form this conceptualized view of how a relationship maybe should be, partly in reaction to the parents, but not just from our parents. And I think, you know, sometimes we get attracted to people that may be part of that, what's part of that sort of conceptualized ideal of what we think a relationship should be like before we've had one.
Of course, but that's always influenced by our earlier experiences of relationships, because our models get shaped by templates. They get, you know, the templates, the observations that we make as a child about the relationship that we witness between our parents or the relationship that our parents have with us. So we're not usually growing up in a vacuum. We already have an idea of a relationship and what it might look like. Yeah. And we might want to have, absolutely might have an idealized view because we've experienced an ideal scenario between our parents. That's very rare, but that might be the case. Or we might have witnessed the opposite between our parents and therefore want to create an ideal relationship because that's what we didn't witness when we were growing up. One way or the other, what informs our thinking about relationships will always come from our earlier experiences in childhood. I don't think you can kind of remove it from that.
No, I think definitely it's an important influence. The question is how much of an influence. That comes from what perspective you're looking at this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, as well, if you, for example, if your parents were aggressive, if they were physically aggressive, it may be that you see some people who go into relationships where their partner's aggressive. Mm. And again, it's not sort of reliving or kind of trying to heal that wound. But again, sometimes it's what you're used to. Again, it fits into that belief. And it's about just examining that and realizing that this doesn't have to be that way, that you're not unworthy of love, that you're not this, you know, that these beliefs are just things that you've learned, essentially.
Yeah.
And of course, a lot of these, most of these come from these early years experience with the parents, but they can shift, they can change. And absolutely, like you said, these early experiences play an important part in that. But I think it's also, you know, as we go through life, as different stages in our development, where the different things become more important. You know, as we go through, if you look at Erikson's work around different life stages, you know, sort of as we go through teenage years, and it's that sort of group and social element where we start relationships become more important. We may look towards other people's relationships as some of these templates. Of course, as early relationships with parents are going to play some part in that as well. But we can also be massively influenced as we go through life,
of course,
by other sets of relationships. I think it's,
of course,
you know, it's important to see how these all combine, that, you know, it's not just, to me, it's not just that you're kind of attract someone that necessarily has those qualities of your parents.
Well, it's unconscious. I would agree it's always there on some level. From my observations as a couples therapist, I think it's always there. That's why I always do that kind of work with my couples on that. But most people are not aware of it. And of course, it's the last thing they want. If you ask them, are you looking for a partner who's like your mum and dad? They would say, oh, hell no. You know, I want quite the opposite. Of course, lots of people would say that. But there's often a surprise how many parallels there actually are. And of course, you don't enter a relationship in order to repeat the old patterns. You enter a relationship because you've got hope. You want something very different. You want love. You want care. You want all the things that you might have had in childhood, you might not have had in childhood. You know, you might want quite the opposite. So it's always a dimension as far as I'm concerned. And I agree with you. Of course, the influences, you know, influences go beyond your childhood experiences also into adulthood, and romantic relationships you had, they also shape your experiences. We've talked about attachment styles in lots of our podcasts. Attachment styles are malleable. They're not set in stone. And you might have had a very secure upbringing in your childhood, and then have a series of of relationships which leave you very insecure. I think it's less likely, but it's possible. Conversely, you might have had a very insecure upbringing and had a series of adult relationships which helped you to in the process of becoming more secure as an adult. So that will, of course, have an influence then as well. And then you might be less likely to look for an unsuitable partner. But if you go into, and this is if we come back to the title of our, or the topic of our podcast today, if you find yourself in a situation where you go into relationships with unsuitable partners again and again, then there is a pattern, isn't there? There's a pattern here. There's something that you're not aware of. There's something about... There's a question for me about why, what is it that draws you to these partners? What is it about this low self-worth that you might experience, you know, that draws you to these partners? What do you hope to gain from this? What is the pattern here? What's the hope? What is it that needs to be done here?
Yeah, and I think sometimes when you said, you know, we don't enter the relationships to... Well, we might enter it with hope for caring for things. I think actually sometimes we just enter it because it's familiar, because it reinforces its beliefs. I don't think necessarily it is always looking for something more positive. It's always, you know, what is familiar sometimes? Mm. What reinforces those beliefs? Because if you believe, essentially, because from the past, maybe, you know, take an example that when you were younger, your parents never... kept any of their promises. They always kind of, you know, like they forgot your birthday repeatedly, or, you know, they didn't pick you up from school repeatedly. They forgot to collect you. And from that, it might, you know, a belief might form like, well, I'm not worthy of love. People don't really love me. People don't care about me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a belief. Now, when you take that belief through life, if you really believe that, anything that comes to the contrary is you're going to doubt. You're going to think, what's up with this person? Are they trying to manipulate me? Because ultimately, at the core, you know that, you know, nobody can really love you.
Nobody's really trustworthy.
You because
nobody's,
you learned this belief.
Sure.
Of course, that belief isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, first of all, by finding certain people, for example, who are more aloof, as one example, attractive, might be a way just to reassure or just to kind of confirm that belief that, you know, people are never really going to care about me. So that's what we're used to. That's
the unconscious pull, absolutely.
Yeah, that's that unconscious pull.
Yeah.
And we keep getting stuck in that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really problematic. And if somebody does, and this is another example, you know, if somebody does show too much love and seem to be too caring, we then might think, well, what's wrong with them? There's something wrong with them. And we might end that relationship because, you know, something doesn't fit. It doesn't fit with our kind of view of the world because we've become maybe, you know, actually avoidant in our attachment style.
Mm.
So when things get too close, we put the shutters down, we shut off because, again, that's what we're used to. We're replaying that familiar.
Mm, absolutely. So the only way really forward here is to gain an understanding of yourself, to have some sense of, you know, what are my patterns here? What is it that I am getting pulled into? What is it that I'm seeking from this other person? What do I find attractive about this other person? What do I find familiar about this other person? Does this person remind me of qualities that my parents had, for example, my primary caretakers or influential people in the past? Is this what I'm trying to recreate here? And what is it? What are the patterns that play out in terms of interactions that I'm familiar with? You know, if I'm frustrated about something, how are they going to respond to that? What is it that I'm very used to here? What kind of dimensions, what patterns are playing out again and again? Unless you kind of work that out, you are more or less, I think, doomed to repeat them again and again.
Yeah, and finding some of those core beliefs that you formed about, that's quite tricky because they're largely unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
We don't verbalise them. We don't really know them. We just experience them in our life when certain patterns repeat again and again. It's like we come against a brick wall. And that's usually when we can see there's some unconscious belief that's at play, that's essentially guiding our behaviour, guiding our actions and our reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where sometimes, you know, I think it's really important to work with a counsellor or a psychotherapist to kind of get in touch with what really is. What are these beliefs that are playing out?
Mm-hmm.
And remembering that they're learned.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also just picking up on something you said earlier, you know, some of our things that we're attracted to, there is that societal influence as well as sort of the early experience. Like you said, you know, if you're attracted to people with leather jackets, that didn't probably come from your parents. This comes from films, it comes from movies. It's like, you know, in the past where, you know, cigarette advertising made cigarette smoking to be sexy.
Mm.
It's like these films of the guys with leather jackets that are tough, that aren't speaking, that treat people in a certain way.
Absolutely.
I think we're very much influenced by this, not just parents. I mean, I think this is, you know, we see things as we're growing up and where there's influential years where, you know, the way that society makes certain things appealing affects us very deeply.
Of course, the lone wolf is always attractive. I mean, I think most people have had an experience of that. Or this idea of that you are, it's the idea of conquest, isn't it? It's the idea of I'm getting someone who is really difficult to get. So it makes my quest all the more worthy. The more I try, the harder I try, you know, the more I'm kind of really trying to put all my energies into this quest. And if I convince this person that I'm actually worthy myself, how absolutely wonderful is that? Conversely, if somebody makes it too easy, and I hear this a lot with couples, with clients who say, well, they're just too nice. Yeah, I kind of didn't quite fancy them because they were a little bit too nice. That often then relates to this idea of, well, if it's made too easy, if it's not a quest, then it's not worthy. I don't want to engage in that. But really, that's a very, in some sense, quite a childish response, isn't it?
It is, but it does happen a lot. Mm. Yeah, there is that big thing with being too nice. And yeah, what is that all about?
Yeah, I mean, how can anyone be too nice? Yeah,
I mean, if you think in the long term, would you rather be in a relationship with somebody who's really nice to you or somebody that's really mean to you? And in the long term, what do you really want?
Mm.
You know, it's really interesting where that comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, yes, that whole thing to do with quest, to do with challenge, and very much, I think, stories in society also kind of influence that.
Mm-hmm.
And that all of the stories, really, most stories in literature, most of the films we see, it's sort of, there's an end quest, but that quest involves struggle.
Mm-hmm.
It involves challenge. Mm-hmm. But without challenge, it's not really worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, and sometimes that theme becomes problematic today, like where we think, where does that end? Where there has to be a challenge in winning the heart of the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And where, you know, it may seem like the other person isn't interested. And because we've internalized this theme that, well, it's the challenge, I go through the challenge, that can end up in almost like harassment to some extent as well. It's like, you know, we're thinking, well, I've got to get through this challenge. I know that the other person doesn't seem to want to respond, but I know if I get through these tasks, if I sing outside their window, again, in films, that whole thing, you know, go and sing a ballad outside their window in the middle of the night. You know, these sort of things might be romantic in films, but in real life, they're kind of, you know, the police will get called up and take you away. So it's sort of, you know, again, there's a lot of, there's this challenge between this imagery that we've grown up with, society, stories, books, in terms of what's romantic and actually what actually works in real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think I would always invite everyone to consider what are you actually looking for, and what are the indicators for you that you are in the presence of someone who is having a positive influence on you, who's good for you, who nurtures you. What are the signs that you have this person in front of you? That might be way more important than you know, whether they like the same music or the same books or whether you enjoy going to the cinema together. This is all completely irrelevant in the end. This is not an indicator of a strong relationship, whether you share the same interests. But a person's qualities, that's what really matters. And do they offer you qualities that make you feel well, that make you feel good, that make you feel cared for and looked after? That's ultimately. Also, do they offer you qualities that make you, that give you the capacity to develop yourself in the relationship? You know, do they nurture your passions, for example? Are they supportive of you in your activities in life? These are all qualities that are, I think, way more important. And don't be too judgmental in terms of saying, well, somebody is too nice. I would question that a little bit.
Yes, and I think as well, it's knowing that, actually, I hate this expression, but, you know, you have to break a few eggs to make an omelette. It's like, you know, particularly, I think, when you're younger, and I looking back, those early experiences of relationships where if it don't work out, you know, you may start to think, well, I always get attracted to the wrong person. Mm-hmm. They never sort of treat me well, and or they always kind of like end in a relationship. But, well, I think some stepping back and knowing that it's not necessarily about you even. It may not be you replaying your relationships. It's just that there are a lot of people who are going through their own challenges. And it may also be, you know, partly luck of the draw that you get involved with a few people time after time that, you know, we get this end result.
Mm, yeah.
And some of it is luck. Some of it is just bad luck.
Maybe. Of course, some of it is
also luck. And also, when people are younger, it's like those formative, those early relationships are quite formative about your self-image in relationships, I think.
Mm.
Your own relationships. And if they don't work out, it's easy to then start believing there's something about you that's wrong.
Mm.
And I think it's important to know that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
Probably not the case. Yeah. And it could be, you know, when people are younger, like I said, they're exploring their self-identity. They're exploring what's important to them. They don't really know what they want. And so it's often the other person is dealing with these things and making sure we don't internalize it as being something wrong with us.
Mm. Yeah, and also I think finally it's also important to remember, we've talked about this before in previous podcasts, that particularly when it comes to dating or online dating, that the dating pool is likely to hold more people who are more of an avoidant dismissive attachment style, who are likely to kind of enter the dating market again and again because they struggle to build trusting long-term relationships. There's more, you're more likely to encounter other people who have that kind of attachment style, as far as you can generalize this. And of course, you might struggle with that particular attachment style yourself. So there's more of this going around, I think. And therefore, when somebody turns you down, when somebody doesn't, you know, doesn't want to enter a relationship with you, absolutely, it's all right what you say, Tom. It's not necessarily your material, it's their material. Is their trust issues that are playing out there that need to be addressed on their side.
Yes, and you know, those may reinforce those earlier sort of limiting beliefs that we formed.
Mm.
And those limiting beliefs need to be really worked through, I think, in some sort of therapy because they're challenging to change.
Yes.
But just knowing that, you know, just because something's happened 5 times, it doesn't mean it's going to happen the 6th time.
Mm.
And that in terms of dating, in terms of finding a person that you can really be happy with, it can take time.
Mm.
And we talked about the struggle. We talked about that, like, you know, the challenge. Well, I think it's not necessarily having to go through that challenge for that one person you think is the person, but it may be a challenge in terms of finding the right person in that sea of all different beliefs, experiences, but somebody who you can connect with and have a long-term relationship. And you could be lucky. It could be the first person, the second person. It could be the 100th person. But just knowing that, you know, I think there's somebody out there really for everyone. That as long as enough time, enough kind of commitment is put through to working through our own issues, to working through, you know, whatever it happens to be, that we can find a relationship where ultimately we will feel fulfilled. We'll feel that sense of contentment and happiness, whatever it is that you're looking for.
Yeah, because if we look at it as a quest, you know, the quest for finding a partner, in the process of this quest, I think you also always learn something about yourself. And it's painful a lot of the time, isn't it? It's painful feeling rejected, feeling that you really like someone, they don't like you, having that kind of experience repeated again and again. But I think there's also something very often that crystallizes in this process and that shapes up, which is maybe a clearer sense of what you are actually looking for and what might be good for you. What's, you know, what kind of person might be good for you. So hopefully that kind of comes out of this process as well. I think it often does. More clarity about what it is that you need and want.
Yeah, so you certainly, you build your own strength, you build resourcefulness as you go through that journey.
Mm.
And you just may have to deal with a few dragons along the way.
Oh, absolutely. They need to be slain.
That's right. Great. So thanks for listening today. If you want to find out more about improving your relationship, head over to therelationshipmaze.com and press subscribe right now.
Bye for now.